Welcome to the highlights of the Circular Republic Festival, Europe's leading event for advancing the circular economy, uniting corporates, startups, and innovators driving this transformation. We continue this series with a panel about circularity in electronics and automation. The panelists are Ansgar Krivet, Chief Research and Development Officer at Festo; Lukas Biedermann, co-founder and COO of SpareTech; Patrick Tullio, Project Lead Implementation Strategy and Operational Management Circular Economy at BMW Group; and Eva Riesenhuber, Global Head of Sustainability at Siemens. But before we start, I have an offer for you. If you want to get the actionable one-pager of this conversation, please sign up to the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm.
Any roasts free? Perfect. This looks great. Green stage is full again. This is how it's supposed to be. And I'm very delighted that we have been talking now about circularity in the automotive industry. And we'll now be going into circularity in the electronics and automation industry. And especially the question will be triggered and tackled: how will German engineering look like in the future? I think quite a appropriate question, and I'm very delighted to be now handing over to Niklas. Please give him a round of applause.
Yes, Satina, as you said, we stay more or less in a similar context, changing a bit the industries, but also with large overlaps between those two issues. We've heard it this morning on the economy panel. We've heard it also in these discussions. Of course, our vehicles industry, our manufacturing industry, all those industries depend on a complex web of materials that are within those high-tech products. The interesting case here is that we have really high-value, high-quality components in the field, and the question is, how can we capture that value that we have in there? And that's exactly what we're doing. If you're thinking about especially rare earth elements, for instance, that you'd find from wind turbines, servo motors, robots, basically anywhere, there are so many critical technology metals where we, again, tap into this whole issue of also supply chain security that's really worth having a look. And at the same time, we have really, really promising business cases out there where we may be able to basically leverage what in many cases the classic, and that's why we call it like the future of German engineering, the classic virtues of manufacturers come into play. That means high quality, durability, longevity, trustful relations with our customers and suppliers that also enable us to realize maybe more complex business models than just saying we sell something and then goodbye forever. That's exactly what we want to look into here. And that's basically also the way to go, maybe also the only way to go for German engineering. If we come back to the point that the race to the bottom is something that we as a German European industry will never be able to win, there's also always going to be someone cheaper. But maybe if we leverage our traits, then we'll actually be able to really also shape the future of German engineering or the manufacturing industry in general. And it's my great pleasure to discuss precisely that with a really exciting group of panelists, which are in alphabetical order: Lukas Biedermann, the co-founder and COO of SpareTech; Eva Riesenhuber, the global head of sustainability of Siemens; Patrick Tullio, who manages... Yes. who manages the whole governance side of circularity within BMW, and we're going to be discussing that, and Ansgar Krivet, the board member for R&D at Festo. Thank you so much for being here with me and with us today. Ansgar, in June, it's 100 years Festo this year. Congratulations, by the way. So really, just like Siemens, like basically also BMW, of course, really icons of German industry, the core of what we would call our industrial bases. And for your anniversary. You're hosting an innovation conference. I'll also be there, which I'm really looking forward to. And it's basically dedicated to the ABC of your future, which is AI, biologization, and circularity. So what does circularity, what role does it play for you today and tomorrow for your future, for the next 100 years of Festo?
Yeah, circularity is really important for a family enterprise like Festo, right? We look back on a history of 100 years, but we also look forward for hopefully many more hundred years to come. And therefore, we need to think about what does circularity mean to us. And it actually has two dimensions. One dimension is that we are looking at circularity of our own products. So how do we design for circularity? How can we remove the necessity to shred parts? How can we design for disassembly? How can we make it simple to reuse and to repair? The other dimension is circularity as a business field, right? We see that in the future there will be much more circularity needed, and that also needs automation. So it is an opportunity for us also to grow and to sell our products into disassembly equipment, into recycling equipment, and even into biologization. We see in the future, and that is the B part of the conference, we see that in future a lot of things that are today done chemically will be done biologically. And these biological processes also have to be automated and controlled, and that is also a very important part, especially also in the closing the circle aspect.
Yeah. Now, we come from Festo, German, large German Mittelstand company, to maybe Siemens as the global tech player. Eva, from your experience in driving circularity in Siemens's business, what challenges and opportunities have you been observing?
So first of all, thank you very much for the invitation. Delighted to be here with this group of really inspiring and inspired people. I know you all know this, but let me just briefly tell you how Siemens is looking at the world. So we're very aware of population growth. In 2050, there will be close to 10 billion people on the planet. We're also fully aware that we today already consuming 1.7 times the Earth, so much more than the Earth can generate. So that is putting a lot of pressure on supply chains. So when you look at material scarcity, availability of material, we know we're going to run into scarcity spots. And the only way to close them is by closing the loop. I know we are motivated here in this room by climate change and biodiversity loss. And this is very, very real, and it's motivating me as well. But it has impact on economies, and it informs governments to push regulations. So the world that we're navigating is one where you artificially change markets through government regulations because they realize that they have to close the loop and keep material and products in the life cycle over and over and over again, because this is also a way to geopolitical independence. So once you have, you know, that material gets extracted in countries that maybe are not that friendly, processed somewhere else, but once they're already have been imported, once they stay in that country. So just pointing out that going to circularity is really good business because it helps you become more resilient, more competitive, and sustainable. So where do you start? And the short answer is you have to start everywhere. As a global company, so it's like when you look at product design, it's refuse, reduce, rethink. We have to think how it scales, which is a superpower of business. It should scale, which means that for the customer, it has to be more performance and less cost and sustainable, which means we have to be smarter than ever before. We dematerialize, we're making it smaller, we're adding functionality, and we're phasing secondary material, not simply because we want to save the planet, but because secondary material in the next few years will be cheaper than the original material. Going back to supply chain, but also CO2 taxes like CBAM and others. So it's really changing the world we're operating in. So product design, but then you also already have a lot of products in the field. How do we get them back? The reverse logistics part, where we need to partner, which is what we're talking about today. And then the repair, refurbish, remanufacture, all of that, we all understand, is operating models. How do you make money out of it? So cracking the business model code, and it's like, I don't want to take too much time here. Maybe one of the next questions you ask me about cracking the business model code, because you can't just stop thinking about what your superpower is. You need to figure out how to scale and who you need. So it's system thinking, ecosystem. How do you make money? By not selling more, but by keeping it alive a lot longer. Where do you do that for a global company? And what do you start piloting? So all of these are questions that one has to think about when moving into circularity, which, by the way, is a very unique opportunity for humanity to rethink something that has been broken from the beginning.
Exactly. And cracking the business case. I don't know who among you has followed the opening. Some of you just arrived, so I'll maybe briefly recap. I said the provocative phrase in discussion with the former co-president of the Club of Rome, Sandrine, that I believe that in sort of the notion of getting rich by saving the world. Maybe it's getting rich was sort of the wrong way to say it. I'd say earn money by saving the world. She, I got myself a bloody nose. I don't know if you saw it. She hated it. She literally said so because she said that is the thinking that brought us in the wrong direction. And at the same time, I'm with you saying if we want such business cases to scale by themselves, we need to crack the business case. That means we need to earn money with them. One aspect for maybe we'll get into cracking the business case in a second, but one key aspect to this is of course the customer, which leads me to Patrick, obviously, as BMW is one of the large customers who then ultimately in certain contexts then use, for instance, Siemens products, really also Festo products in their manufacturing lines. And at the same time, you are also a manufacturer of yet another product, which is obviously cars. When thinking now about your own products, and you've mentioned the multi-layeredness of this whole challenge, what role do product design, you've also mentioned it, Ansgar, procurement, also governance, because that's exactly your task right now, in a way, play in embedding that within such a large, complex organization as large corporates simply are?
Yeah. So maybe it's additional to that what Ansgar mentioned at the beginning. So the design principle for BMW is design for circularity. So think today what is necessary tomorrow. And on the other hand, from our organization governance perspective in our project, we created a journey and bring all the four segments in our business model for circularity together. The first thing is the develop segment. So as I mentioned, how we think today, we need to design products to get, let's say, the results for circularity targets then tomorrow. The second thing is, for us, it's called source. It's the procurement, so how we can enable our supply chain to get the material. It's the availability, what was mentioned before. And then the third segment is the production. So we also need an efficiency in the production, like saving energy, saving water by manufacturing products. And the last aspect is the collection part. It's like Daniel in the panel before was mentioning how we bring all the parts, all the vehicles back to our business so we can gain materials out of it and then making use. So in an, let's say, in a perfect world, yeah, so it should be the target from two or three old vehicles, is it possible to create one new one? Yeah, that's an ambitious target, yeah, but that should be, let's say, the vision on the horizon.
Yeah. That, again, then comes down to, yeah, mainly product design, of course, also, which leads me back to Ansgar as the R&D board member, so the engineer, in a way. How do you embed that into your whole research and development process to design products today that are ready for circularity tomorrow?
In the R&D process and the design process, you always have different goals and also conflicting goals, right? Yeah. No matter whether you do cars, whether you do electronic controls or actuation motion instrument, you have always conflicting goals. And then you need to find good balances to achieve the best level of all the different potentially conflicting targets. And sometimes you can find also very good solutions. So if you think about circularity, maybe you find out that instead of using two materials combined in one product, which then makes it difficult to recycle the material, you can use one material that has a coating to create the same effect, technical effect, but is actually better for recyclability, and it's also better for the cost. So sometimes you need to find synergies. And we do that by having clear design guidelines for our design teams. So we have a lot of design teams around the world that are designing future products, and they all have clear guidelines what to take care of. But this is never, let me say, the unique target, right? It's always a combination of different optimization targets. Just like you said, we need to make it work. Therefore, it cannot be double the cost. We need to find good compromises between the different targets. One thing that helps us actually here is digitalization. Because in order to re-something, to repair, to reuse, to recycle, the one thing that you need is information, right? What happened to the product during its first life? And there, digitalization offers huge opportunities. Think of the digital twin with the possibility to have an instance that collects all the loads that the product has seen. Fantastic opportunity then to use that information in a recycling, reuse, repair process. And that is something that that we trust in a lot, and where we also invest a lot of effort to make sure that we know as much as possible about any product that comes back to us. Mm.
Now, Eva, coming back to that business case, Siemens as a global industry, you're a hardware, but also to a large extent, obviously, a software company. And you come in, when we're thinking about cracking that business case, probably from two angles. One thing is driving circularity within your own products, but of course also enabling other companies to go circular on that data level in terms of R&D and so on. Can you share with us a bit how you empower other companies and also drive it internally, and how you crack then eventually that business case?
Yeah, so as you know, that Siemens has been around for 170, more than 175 years. So we build the infrastructure we live in the real world, as in electrification and building and transportation, in industry manufacturing. And now we have the biggest industry software portfolio, and we simulate it. So we can simulate the product, and we can also simulate it for, optimize it for substance usage, for example. We simulate the product, we simulate the production or the process, so we can do the entirety of this product, and of course already consider the end of life of that product or the end life cycle of that product. And then in the real world, we can build it, and with our sensors, we get the data of performance, and we can go back and optimize that digital loop. So that digitalization really is a way for us to be smarter than ever before. And I give you an example. Now, having that data, having that simulation, we now add AI to it. And when you think of the traditional robot cripper, for example, like you all know a robot cripper in a factory. It weighs around 50 kilograms. With AI and our software, we were able to design it in a way that is now being printed with a 3D printing. It only weighs 2 kilograms. It has the same performance as a regular 50-kilogram one. It looks like a hollowed-out coral. Like, I don't think people would have been able to imagine something like this. And it's 90% lighter. It's so much more efficient, it uses less energy, and it's faster because it also less mass to move around. So this is the potential that we have with that kind of technology, and of course that helps us with circularity. When you now think about designing updatable, upgradable, modular, like all of that is like we're really entering an era where we can think broader, more systemic, and much deeper than ever before. And that makes me actually optimistic that we can do this.
Excellent. And already now we have also very specific use cases out there that are really exciting and functioning. Lucas, I want to get into what your startup, I'd rather say scale up probably meanwhile, is actually doing. And you're working with some here on stage, I guess, also. And you write on your website, by transforming industrial spare parts data into an efficient, reliable, and collaborative experience, you want to empower a zero-waste industrial sharing economy. Can you explain to us what that means?
Sure thing. So the next 15 minutes are mine. So, maybe shifting gears a little bit. I think what Ansgar and also Eva referred to is a big problem of the manufacturing industry today. In Germany alone, when we talk about the products of Festo, Siemens, and all the other manufacturers, 58 billion euros in spare parts for industrial machinery and equipment are dead inventory. They don't move, they didn't move for the past decade, and they are about to be scrapped. And this amount increases year over year, and that's why the Siemens, and I'm delighted to be on stage because Siemens and Festo chose SpareTech years ago as one of the data, or basically the data provider to BMW, Bosch, Nestlé, and many other leading manufacturing companies worldwide, because we basically index the entire installed base of all the equipments of the industrial players and can then tell where did actually the real physical part end up. And now that it's discontinued since 5 years, where is a risk for BMW when they produce the cars? Mm-hmm. Because the machine, if it's down, you will not get the part anymore because it's from the 80s or 90s, not at BMW, but us. Right? So that kind of very specific spare parts use case for machines and equipments is a huge opportunity to really make footprint impact, simply because of the huge amount of waste that's being produced, shipped, installed, not recycled because it's scrapped. And there's a lot of money and energy wasted on that, and that's where SpareTech comes in. And I think data is our fuel that we basically leverage.
And by pooling those spare parts, also you in the end create like a more efficient overall system from which then every partner in that system benefits. But that's probably the challenge. You have that global optimum and you have the many local optima. Yeah. And you have to make sure that everyone benefits from the global optimum, otherwise everyone will hold to its local one, right?
So there was one thing that I learned from my PhD on supply chain resilience in 2018. And that's basically the challenge of building local-to-local supply chains. And the interesting thing is that within the industrial space around Munich, around Stuttgart, in Western Germany, there's a lot of manufacturing companies that actually do have 20, 40% of the same Siemens Festo materials installed. And we know that. So referring to that vision, we at SpareTech, we are 100% convinced that in the future, manufacturing companies will not have that amount of stock as a physical insurance within the BMW factories to secure uptime in case the machine is down, you can have the right part, but that there will be local-to-local supply chains, and that where industrial giants, as your two companies, have a wonderful opportunity in terms of developing new business models to really be, hey, you know what, we're going to provide you this in no time, our service level is amazing, we have an incredible service team in place already. So now that we know the data is, you have that part, and within the region we have these opportunities, pooling becomes a reality already today, and that's where SpareTech is trying to contribute a lot.
Shifting in a way to industrial ecosystems, collaborative models between and across companies, but that of course also comes with profound implications in terms of data and so on, of geographics, in terms of trust between those companies. How can those be met? And do you think also generally looking into the industry is our mentality, because we need precisely that collaboration also in other aspects of circularity, ready for that?
So BMW will not like to buy a part directly from Knorr-Bremse in Munich here because you don't know how they stored the part, right? You would always love to get it from maybe Siemens or Festo because they know their parts best. But there's an interest maybe in future to buy reused. That is a business model. But there's also other components in that collaboration piece for this spare parts pool that are actually easy to solve in a way if you think about the big machine builders. If you sell machines to BMW, that's a one-time revenue. But you could also think about equipment as a service, manufacturing as a service, right? Because when you talk about circularity, it's not about let's build parts forever that never need to be maintained. It's about the cycle needs to run, right? So it's about we have to have maintenance. We have to rechange the part. Siemens is exactly on that way. Let's make sure you always get the best part that makes your machine uptime to the absolute top level. That's the way to go, right? So we need to design the parts in a way that they contribute to that idea, and we need to find business models for manufacturing industry that allow these kind of, you know, manufacturing principles that BMW is really interested to have a rather high turnover of the spare parts, but the right ones in an efficient and, you know, sustainable way.
Mm-hmm. So longevity, upgradability, modularity, and so on and so forth. In most cases, that will probably lead to a higher upfront investment because you invest in higher quality and so on. At the beginning, that will pay off, but will pay off only on the longer run. And question to you, Patrick, how ready are companies to also take that into account, that they need to invest upfront in some cases to benefit on the longer run?
I guess the first thing, as you mentioned before, is we need a mind shift, some kind of reset and thinking that circularity is not a sprint. That's more a marathon. We need, let's say, some kind of patience to implement the change. And Ansgar mentioned the digitalization, and you mentioned spare part availability and so on. And I guess this is one big challenge for the digitalization on the one hand side, to make transparent the availability of parts, the availability of raw materials, secondary raw materials, recycled content. And on the other side, especially for the automotive industry, we have upcoming regulatory, like the end-of-life vehicle regulation. So we also need a digitalization, some kind of ecosystem where we can show the transparency from the supply chain, where is the material, what kind of material is it, and let me make a step further. It's not only one ecosystem. Maybe we need a collaboration of ecosystems, like for the machinery, for the automobile industry, so that these ecosystems are able to talk to each other, and then we can also figure out the point from the beginning, cracking the business model. If we have the transparency, if we have, let's say, talking ecosystems, then we can figure out the white spots and also then the economic potential spots.
And thereby maybe also really industrialize the latter part of the life cycle of a product, because we've been discussing this up front. We've been optimizing, and I say that repeatedly, we've been optimizing our industrial system from the Industrial Revolution onwards for 150 years in terms of how do we produce and manufacture, assemble, and ultimately finish a product, but we've not invested a fraction of that innovation and energy into the question, how actually do we design the rest of the lifespan? How do we disassemble those products today, and how do we capture the products, the components, material, all the value that is still bound in there? And if we're thinking about cars right now, one thing would be to say, reverse factories also on an automotive industry scale. What do you think does it take, and will we get there eventually throughout the next decades to really have such factories out there?
I guess one point is the collaboration with the suppliers. So this reverse factory needs a lot of, let's say, brain power to think about the disassembly possibilities, what is the right connection, and then bring the interests, the common interests, for example, of the OEMs like Audi, Mercedes, BMW, together and say, let's find some fitting systems where we're not competing to each other, to make it easier also as a collaboration with the disassembly factories, with the recyclers, that is easy for them to gain also high-quality recycled content, because I guess this is the main point for the European region and for the European market, that we are able to gain a lot of recycled content and also be able to bring it back then in the production circle.
Fine. Touching upon that engineering perspective and coming back to Festo, I really think that, as said, we've caught this whole thing, German engineering, that is so close to the DNA also of our industry, that we really can be an export champion or a world champion, basically, in setting precisely such systems up. From your perspective, Ansgar, is that a path for also Festo's future? And are you already taking the first steps?
If I recall discussions with customers around the world, in Americas, in Asia, in Europe, my impression is circularity plays a bigger role in Europe than it does anywhere else in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that is no coincidence, right? We are a limited continent with limited space, a lot of population. We have very few raw materials, right? So we also rely much more on thinking about circularity. The pressure here is stronger, and the regulatory pressure comes on top. So we are more aware of the fact that this thing is coming. But it is not only coming for us, and Eva, you mentioned that, we are consuming factor 1.7 of what the Earth can provide. Mm-hmm. So it is a question of humanity, right? But we are the ones that feel the pain first, and that is actually a good thing, because that helps us to, that forces us to develop solutions that then later we can also export, and we can make good business out of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that is an opportunity, and that's an opportunity that we have to develop. We are still in the starting phase, right? How to get the material back, how to test, how to assess the quality. Many, many questions are open. So we do pilot projects, we do studies, we do collaboration with some customers. It is not yet a broad business case, but we are working on it, and we are ahead, and that's a good thing. It will become a very good business for us in the future. Mm-hmm.
I would add, on the one hand, that there is very fierce regulation coming up also globally, especially when I'm thinking about China, who are really, really ambitious. And at the same time, in terms of mentality, I would also absolutely stress that here, you often, in Europe, you hear regarding circularity, oh, come on, that's old wine in new pipes, or that's common sense. Yeah. But that's exactly what you mean. That is so actually close to how... Also, whatever, my grandmother would think about dealing with resources, that is very close to actually our general mentality. But it comes down, in getting it done, to collaboration. And maybe we can conclude with that, Eva, before we open up also for questions. How can that collaboration succeed, and how can we work together, after all, to manage?
And if you allow me one comment before I jump on collaboration... It's China. I'm completely with you. The consumer in China is not like the European consumer. But the government is so aware of the need to move to circularity. And just last October, so really 9 months ago, they formed a state-owned enterprise for recycling. They capitalized with $1.3 billion. They have the largest EV fleet in the world. All these batteries are coming back, and they need to be recycled. So let's not... trick ourselves. This is geopolitical competition on the technology behind circularity. And we're very much in that competition, finding the right way. And that gets me to the ecosystem question that you asked. It's about figuring out the sweet spots in an ecosystem. Mm. We're fully aware that we can't do it ourselves. We will not become a recycling company. But when we partner with recycling companies, we know how our products have been built. It's like also for BMW, you know exactly how your products have been built. You have the blueprint of being able to optimize taking it apart. And there may be things in your cars that you definitely want back that are more valuable, that you might be able to reuse over time or that you need for future spare parts. So they're different considerations. But then you need the recycling industry to come in and play their part. And of course, if you want to close the loop, and we all need secondary metals like aluminum, steel, copper. So if you partner with your recycling company in an ecosystem, you also you find a way to channel your used products there for recycling. You may enter into offtake agreements for what is coming out at the other end. That is one way of determining the ecosystem you want to have, and it's many different ecosystems on many different levels, but it's also the question of, if you want to scale it, where is the business model for all of that? So again, coming to, we're pulling some products back. Some products have so much value that maybe we don't want to have them move to recycling. Maybe we simply refurbish them ourselves, move them to secondary marketplaces, and sell them again. Or... we have a customer. A customer always has a challenge. A customer doesn't buy a product because he wants a product. A customer buys a product or a solution to address a challenge. It's that whole question of you buy a drill for a hole in the wall. All you need is the hole in the wall. Mm. So if you figure out how to get that hole in the wall for the customer, we back at service and we add outcome, promising an outcome, and that's a completely different model. And the nice thing is, it doesn't matter if the product that is being used is refurbished or remanufactured, because we guarantee
the result that counts.
The result.
Exactly. Yeah. But shifting from here to there, that is a profound transformation, obviously, in many regards. And I think it really relies on the right people driving that change within the organization and across the organization. The bigger the company, of course, the more complex it is. But after all, it always comes down to people driving that change. And we see it. It's really inspirational working with your colleagues at Siemens, how these change makers, I mentioned that this morning, how they drive the change. And after all, in close collaboration with the customer and maybe also the customer's customer, after all, realize those new models, maybe first on a small scale and then even larger. And the good news is, and that's also something I'm repeating myself from this morning's opening, I said it this morning, and because it popped to my mind this night, if there's, and I'm serious about that, on this day, on the entire planet Earth, you will not find another place than here and now where the density is higher of such change makers, trailblazers, innovators, from corporates, entrepreneurs, and startups, entrepreneurs. So I think we're in the right spot to drive that change also. Wrapping this up, I want to open also the panel to questions from the audience. I'm trying to spot if anyone is raising their hands. No one will be forced. There we are. Ah, Cedric. Excellent. Cedric, you normally always has an inverter with him, but right now I can't spot it. Too bad.
It's in the car.
Microphone is coming.
Yeah, thanks for the interesting discussion. Maybe one thing, or what would be the thing for you, being it from regulatory side, from market side, if you had a wish for really boosting this circularity, economical change that we are talking about? If you had one wish, I mean, Christmas is still away a little bit, but still, maybe if Christmas was tomorrow, what would be that wish?
Question to all of us?
To everybody, yeah. Just shortly.
Should we go from the left to right, or whoever is first? I have one wish, but I don't need to
I
start.
I have one too.
Me too.
Okay, let's go.
Okay,
okay. I don't believe so much in fairy tales and wishes. I think what lies ahead of us is just hard work. Right? There's a lot of things that we need to do. We are on a good path, and we need to continue down that path, and then I'm sure we will be successful. So I see the road paved, and I don't think we need additional wishes or fulfillment of additional wishes.
I have one. So the EU announced the Clean Industrial Deal. Mm-hmm. And it includes the Circularity Act. And we know the mindset shift that has happened. And we also know that back in 2021, they promised $1 trillion in funding for the energy transition and the circularity transition. I really wish that we now see that and that it connects to all the regulation that we're now fulfilling, because that justifies the burden. Like, we got a lot of stick now. Getting a lot of carrot would really help.
Good one.
I have one very specific wish in the context of critical raw materials that we're looking into right now that touches upon lots of industrial applications, especially if we think about permanent magnets. You find permanent magnets in any wind turbine, servo motor, linear motor, EV, obviously, window lifter, by the way, seat mover in your car. Anywhere where something moves, probably there's a permanent magnet inside there, because you need that for the electromotor. And we have an incredible dependency, namely on China, with regard to production, to mining, refining, and production of such permanent magnets. And we basically tapped into the same trap as with solar, as with battery materials, for instance. And we're having a hard time getting out of that. At the same time, we have recycling technologies here in Europe that function, mm-hmm. where we could gain back those materials, but they are not competitive on an economic level with the primary raw materials that come into the market, partly also really by quotas. It's simply also a political lever. If we introduced in the Circular Economy Act, for instance, and we have that already in the Critical Raw Materials Act, a mandatory quota that goes for everyone, because then we have a level playing field that says and that's written in the Critical Raw Materials Act, 25% recycled content on such materials such as permanent magnet rare earth elements, then we would be able to actually leverage the potential of secondary value chains within Europe and at least partly make ourselves independent. We haven't got it so far. We hope that it might be a chance in the Circular Economy Act, but it shows how the... I'm not a fan of specific regulations, but of setting the right framework conditions where then businesses can base their long-term decisions on also. I think that would help very much.
So now I have to switch my wish, but I make it short because my wish is on the people and mindset side. So please to push the transformation of circularity, please let's think up together. The solution is only in collaboration, in combining ecosystem. It's not a standalone and a competitive way forward. It's a way together.
I think the fuel that drives innovation, you know, obviously capital is available, brain power is available. I think the biggest challenge we have is on the execution side. So it's not a wish, it's only, at least at Spheretic, we try to focus on that. It's like keep it very customer-centric always and very simple and move fast on one specific use case. And I think that helps a lot to learn faster. I think speed is a currency, hard work is everything that was said is probably pretty important from mindset to hard work. But I would always say customer-centric simplicity on one use case.
Thank you so much. Motivating, at least for me. We have not even a minute left. That's why I think this... Ah, okay. Very important question. Okay. Ah, Joss. Yes.
Well, now you've set me up. I better say something important then. Hi, Joss from the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. One very quick comment and one ask. Thanks, Eva and Ansgar. I think putting the emphasis on where the circular economy comes from in terms of supply chain, secure, you know, the same applies to the EU and to China. They both came at it from the same perspective, and China has now wrapped circular economy into its arsenal of things that lead to what they call an ecological civilization. By the way, there's an MOU between the EU and China on circular economy that we facilitate through our Beijing office, so we're always very keen to help where we can from a business policy interface perspective. And maybe my ask, in the current climate, I think it's more important than ever than the private sector and you guys who are being pioneers in circular economy really advocate for these business models and show that it makes a lot of sense. Because the weight of the voice of the private sector gives a lot of mandate and gives more ambition to policymakers to be really bold and ambitious when it comes to creating the enabling conditions. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Joss. I can only stress that also, by the way, in the permanent magnet example, it's exactly that. Also what we hear from politics, that we need the clear mandate in a way from the industry that everyone is agreeing that we need to, yeah, level up our game, if you will. Once more, thank you so much. We're going to have a brief coffee break right now. Probably that's also something that maybe Tatina is going to be announcing, so I'll better be quiet. Thank you so much.
Thank you for not stealing my job, Nicholas. So, of course, we have heard many, many great things. And before I let you chat over it in your coffee break, I would like to let you know what to expect. So in around 10 minutes at 2:40, there's another tour at the Materials Lab. Then the story...
This was another episode in our series about the Circular Republic Festival 2025. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation, please sign up to the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher.
And this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.